Yes, indeed. I'm back. I said I'd be back on this Friday. I like doing two a day, and I'm going to try to make this one shorter. Maybe that'll be my policy. When I do two a day, the first one's long form, the second one will be shorter, although not too short, but I'll make them shorter. But before I do that, I have to waste some time, which I just contradicted myself, right? Well, welcome to the Bernie Miklas Show here on YouTube. So how am I wasting time? Because I got a couple inquiries. You see that? I was asked, like, why are you wearing a Washington Bullets hat? Well, answer. As you many of you know, I grew up outside of Baltimore, between Baltimore and Washington, but closer to the Baltimore side. When I was a kid, I loved the Baltimore Bullets, the NBA team there. And one of my sports idols was Wes Unseld. Some of the other Baltimore Bullets I love, Earl the Pearl Monroe, Jack Maron, Gus Johnson, on and on and on and on. So the Bullets moved to suburban Washington, Landover. And that actually was closer to my home. So I would go to Washington Bullets games out in Landover. In fact, was there the year the Bullets defeated Seattle to win the NBA championship. Now I'm going to be a goofball because I can't remember, is that 1977 or 78? So I've always loved the Bullets. They're now the Wizards, and I still love them, but they're about as futile of a franchise as I can comprehend these days. And I really, really closely followed the Wizards when Bradley Beal of St. Louis of CBC, excuse me, Chaminade, when he was starring for them. So anyway, I still have an allegiance to the Washington Wizards. I hate the nickname, always will. It's just goofy. I don't like it. So I'm all about my childhood team, the Baltimore Bullets, and later the Washington Bullets. Elvin Hayes, Wes Unseld won that championship along with some other really good players. Bobby Dandridge. All right, enough of that. However, I do have a trivia question for you as I continue to waste time. Before we talk about the Blues compared to the Cardinals, trivia question. It's kind of a joke trivia question, but who are or what is the Washington Bullets? Well, I told you the answer. There's two answers. I told you the answer to one, NBA team, now known as the Washington Wizards. If you go back, men and women of a certain age, there's a time in our youth where we were big fans of The Clash. And in 1980, The Clash released a double album, Zandanista. And one of their songs was entitled Washington Bullets, which I thought was very creative. And it was kind of like the U.S. involvement and what was going on with Nicaragua and all that stuff. I'm not going to get into the politics of the situation. So yeah, Washington Bullets was an NBA team, the name of an NBA team, also the name of a 1980 Clash song. The things you learn on this channel, right? And I one thing I picked up on is that y'all like a little music references mixed in. And me going back as old as I am, me going back, it all started when my mom one day came home from work. I was 5 years old, and she set up a record player in my bedroom on the dresser, and she plugged it in, and then she reached over and she had an album, and she put it on the turntable, and she started it, and that album, my friends, was Meet the Beatles. I was 5 years old, and I knew right then that my life had changed. Like, wow, I love this. So just would listen to Beatle album after Beatle album and then adding the Rolling Stones and just on and on and on. So I've always loved music of every genre. So I'll shut up about that. But some of you who are new to the whole Bernie Miklas thing, maybe there's things about me you don't know. So I'm efforting to humanize myself a little bit. It's a tough sell. All right, let me shut up. In part one it's kind of a continuing theme. Like, I don't understand what the Cardinals are doing. They say they're going with youth. It's a youth movement. It's a reset. It's a retool. It's a re. Except they actually went with the U movement in 2024. You can go back and watch the video I did earlier today called Spinning or Winning. They actually started it in 2024, and they're marketing this coming season as if this is something that's brand new. It's not. They did it last year. Okay, that's a quick recap. And I don't understand it, because if you're spending all this money on rehabilitating, renovating, rebuilding the farm system, the minor league infrastructure, the minor league system, you're hiring a whole new staff to run everything. Really impressive hires that Chaim Bloom and Rob Cerfoli have made. And we talked about that the other day. Really, really exciting hires. And you all agreed with that. The Cardinals are going in a new direction, and they're going to have upgraded facilities. They're going to have the latest in technology. They're going to have more instructors, more teachers, more coaches, and the best of everything in terms of getting their young players. And they have some good young players in the minors, getting them fully prepared and giving for the majors, but also giving them every tool you can to help get them to the majors fully prepared. And I appreciate that. I love that. I think most of you were enthusiastically on board with that. But the Cardinals confuse me, as I explained, because they're talking about youth movement. But then now, even though really that was last year, they're continuing it this year. The only difference is that Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman are going to get a full opportunity, and they're not going to pull the plug on them again. Okay, good. But that ain't exactly a youth movement. And you also don't have much room in your rotation unless you move a couple people to give some young arms a full opportunity. Yet John Mozeliak's talking about how, you know, we have every intention of putting a good baseball team on the field. We feel we can take that next step forward. We're excited about what we have. Things can change. But we're going into the next season with optimism that it'll be a fun baseball team to watch. We're giving the young players a runway to see what we really have. And so John Mozeliak is trying to, as I did, for those of you who didn't watch the first one, and I'm giving you a brief recap, John Mozeliak is sort of a lot of mixed messaging here. Well, wait a minute. Is it a youth movement? Or are you now trying to tell us that you're trying to contend, or you think you can contend? You use different words than that, but that's what you're implying. And as I said at the end of the first video, it's like, I'm sorry, but you can't base your strategy on, well, maybe the rest of the National League Central will suck and we can kind of wiggle in there for a playoff spot. Is that really a strategy? So the Cardinals are now all of a sudden painting this pretty picture about 2025. It's like, oh gosh, we're excited with what we have. And they keep talking up the youth movement aspect, but again, this is a continuation of what they went with in a big way last year. And I provided the numbers to prove it. So I don't know whether these people are nervous about season ticket renewals and they have to try to spin. Hey, we're going to be better than you think. They're not saying that, but they're implying it. And they're suggesting that that's a possibility. They're even suggesting, if you listen closely, if you interpret all this, they're changing the messaging from past years where they talked about contending and making a playoff run and winning the division and all that. They've changed it, but they're basically trying to tell you that, hey, this we think this is pretty good. We like what we have. We think we can have a really good baseball team. So what are they trying to sell exactly? First of all, if you thought you had a good baseball team and you think you can contend, whatever, well, why aren't you adding any players? You're subtracting players. You're dumping salary. You're going to try to dump Arenado's salary or a lot of it. I don't know, but yet you won't trade it to this point. It could change. You seem reluctant to trade Ryan Helsley and reluctant to trade Eric Fetty, even though the both of them can walk after the 2025 seasons as free agents. So if you, in this whole youth movement thing, as I said in the first part of the video, and I'm going to get into a contrast with the St. Louis Blues here in a minute. If you feel this good about your team and you make it sound like, well, you don't think you're going to be good. We're excited. You're hinting that maybe we're a bit of a stealth contender. They're not saying that, but that's my interpretation. Well, why don't you add talent to the team then? And if you're not going to add talent to the team to maybe have a better season than everybody thinks, well, why don't you do something to boost your future by, you know, with Helsley and Fetty having value at a personal all-time high, they're not going to have value this high again. And a lot of things can go wrong once the season starts. Now's the time to cash them in and get even more young talent flowing in your pipeline to speed up the process of becoming a legit contender, like back in the olden days when the Cardinals were in the NLCS, it seemed every year, right? Or most years. I mean, you think about it. I mean, 2011 through 2015 were pretty amazing. Mixed messaging, spinning or winning? All right, enough of that. All right, what I wanted to do, but I had to set that up a little bit. And I had to rehash a little bit for people who didn't want to take the time to go watch the first video, and that's okay with me. Let's contrast this with the St. Louis Blues, okay? 2019, hallelujah. The second miracle on ice happened, not Lake Placid, but a lot of us were saying, well, boy, the Blues, they're just never going to win a Stanley Cup, are they? Well, they won a Stanley Cup in 2019. It was one of the greatest things I've ever witnessed. And as a fan, I was doing media, don't get me wrong. But as a fan, I was so jacked up by that. I got more into that than a lot of the Cardinals postseason simply because the Blues have been chasing the Holy Grail for 50 years or just about. They never won a Stanley Cup. There were generations of Blues fans who lived and passed on with that dream unfulfilled. And they finally did it. They finally did it. Remember the scene of, God rest his soul, Bob Plager, going to his brother Barkley's grave and having a toast to the Blues finally winning a Stanley Cup. And he had a Anheuser-Busch product, and he was passing them around, and Bob raised a can, a toast to Barkley, one of the all-time true Blues, right? And they lifted a toast to the Blues winning the Stanley Cup, and he did a pour on Barkley's grave. I choked up watching the video of that, right? So they win it all in 2019. And let this be a reminder, the Cardinals have won, you know, a lot of championships, but they haven't won one since 2011. So if we want to get technical about this, the Blues have been more successful recently than the Cardinals. I ain't talking about the entire franchise history. The Cardinals last got to a World Series in 2013. The Blues got to a conference final in 2016, and they got to the final in 2019, and they won it all. Hallelujah, like I said. But Doug Armstrong, he kept that team together, and he did the best he could. Now, listen, before we even go any further, I feel every time I bring up Doug Armstrong, I got to I have no problem talking about it, acknowledge that some mistakes have been made along the way. You can argue. Some people have a different opinion. I basically think, they offered Alex Pietrangelo enough money to stay, but he insisted on the no movement thing and all that. I don't think they should have let Pietrangelo get away, but listen, what's done is done. And that's all now ancient history. But Doug Armstrong, the worst thing, you know, in from my seat that we've seen, and you agree with this, invested a lot of money in defensemen who really weren't. He made some John Mozeliak moves, is what I'm trying to say. Investing money on talent that was okay, but not at that price point. You know what I'm saying? He did his own version. Army did. He did his own version of Mozeliak signing Dexter Fowler. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? If that makes any sense, the analogy. But the Blues never had a chance to defend their Stanley Cup because of COVID in the 2019-20 season. They had a great team. They're playing great, but there's a big stop in the action until a lot of the COVID stuff started to at least get under control. The NHL could set up a season in a bubble, or maybe two bubbles. I don't even remember now, but the Blues, by the time they all came back, the thrill was gone. It just wasn't the same, you know, but the Blues hung on, and they were a pretty good team there for a while. Jim Montgomery was the assistant coach, and the Blues, 21-22, his last season assistant coach to Craig Berube. The Blues had a heck of a team. and they're really good. Had a lot of points, got in the playoffs. They had Colorado in trouble. Colorado was supposed to roll over them. You remember Jordan Binnington was stealing the damn thing, right? And then that's when Kadri ran Binnington, knocked him out with the knee injury. And to this day, I believe that that was intentional. And I, at the risk of offending people, you know, this outpouring of some kind of like empathy for Kadri, I found to be really kind of funny because he had done that a million times. Well, not a million. He had a reputation for doing that kind of stuff. So therefore, I dubbed him Mother Teresa. You know, oh, don't say a bad thing. Don't say a bad word about Mother Teresa. He would never do anything like that. So anyway, reliving some past times here. But the Blues started to run out of gas, and that's what happens when you stick with your nucleus too long and you don't regenerate, right? Started running out of gas in the 22-23 season. In fact, they did run out of gas. I mean, they weren't flat out awful. They were. They won. They lost one more game than they won, but they weren't in a disgrace or anything like that. But they were sinking. They were sinking. They were sinking. So what did Doug Armstrong do? Had Eric Fetty and Ryan Helsley been hockey players in the spring of 2023, Doug Armstrong would not have looked at them and said, oh, I think we're going to hold on to them. But Army, you have a chance to offload some players that other teams really want, and you can gather some future assets. You can gather some draft picks. And you'll have a lot more to play with as you retool the Blues, right? It could speed up the process. But if John Mozeliak had been, apparently if he had been running the Blues back in the spring of 2023, he said, oh, no, we're not. Oh, no, no, we really like what we have. You know, and once you get in the tournament, anything can happen. So, no, we're not going to trade Ryan O'Reilly. We're not going to trade Vladimir Tarasenko. We're not going to trade Nico Mikola. We're not going to trade Ivan Barbashev. We're not going to trade Achari. And I think that's the list. I mean, he basically said, well, men and women of the NHL in the front offices, take a look, please. We have some fine products to offer you for your stretch run with the hopes that you can maybe go farther in the playoffs and or even win a Stanley Cup. So he traded O'Reilly, he traded Mikola, he traded Tarasenko, he traded Barbashev, he traded Acherry, and Doug Armstrong got some goods in return. He got draft picks in return. He got one prospect, forward prospect, who hasn't so far ignited, Zach Dean. He got them in the Barbashev trade, but there's still a chance for him. But he accumulated draft picks. And he was able to do some wheeling and dealing in the draft, too, to move up and things like that because he had extra draft picks. But what happened is he picked up some guys because of those trades. Listen, Dvorsky was already drafted by then, okay? So was Balduk. So was Snuggerud. So I'm not in saying that they were part of the haul that Doug Armstrong got in exchange for putting – those walk-year talents on the trading block, which is something the Cardinals wouldn't have done because they're kind of like queasy about the idea of cashing in on Helsley and cashing in on Fetty, just to use two examples. But to these young prospects that have a high ceiling, again, Balduk, Snuggerud, Dvorsky, they use some of the draft picks obtained in those on the sell-off on the offload in 2023 to get center, you know, Otto Stenberg, Theo Lindstein, a defenseman. Who else we got? What was it? Adam Jurisic. There's another kid, a left winger named Pekarsik that people like. Luke Fisher. I'm just going down a list. Point is, he already had some good prospects that they had gotten before the sell-off, but they added even more. And now the Blues, they have some really high-end prospects that are on the way to St. Louis. And I don't know exactly how long it's going to take for some of them, But all of a sudden, the Blues have a really nice future if you look at it. And so they had the 1 year where they were under 500 and they didn't make the playoffs. But because he had acquired Pavel Buchnevich and he had done some other things, the Blues last season were actually really quite respectable. It was a very tough Western Conference, but they moved up and they all of a sudden they have a 92-point season. And if you're retooling, when you go from missing the playoffs and you're not close to the playoffs, and then all of a sudden you're up to 92 points, and had you played in a weaker year for your conference, you very well could have been a playoff team, but that was a big leap for them to get to 92 points last year. And so what did Armstrong do? And again, he knows he picked up all of these young assets, all these prospects. So the future's looking good. So what did he do? He didn't stop there. Famously, notoriously, because at that time, nobody in the NHL had been doing this thing with offer sheets. He put in offer sheets for Philip Roberg in Edmonton, the young defenseman, and Dylan Holloway, the young center, both of them former first-round picks, still very young. And he made them offer sheets because he banked on the fact he didn't think Edmonton would match the offer sheets, and they didn't. And then all of a sudden, Armstrong adds two 23-year-olds who can play. They're talented. We've seen that. He adds them to the mix. And then you got this wave of really good prospects on the way, getting close. See, that's how you do it. You can retool, and it doesn't have to last a long time. You can do it quickly. But one of the ways you do it is you offload assets that other teams want. You don't play for the short. You don't sit at the table trying to win one hand with short money and knowing that, you know, it's a long shot. Well, maybe I can thread the needle. What, you know, by keeping Helsley and Fetty before they leave as free agents. You don't keep them for short-term gain. You put that aside and think of what's out there beyond the next season that follows, right? The way Armstrong looked way beyond the fact, well, we could keep this guy or we could do this. We could try to get a contract with that guy. No. I repeat what I said earlier. He put it out on the wire. Hey, I got some good players available for you. Come on and give me a call. We'll do some business, right? We'll see if we can get something done. I'll help you and you help me. And because Doug Armstrong understood, when you're in the position that he's in, a retool, soft rebuild, whatever, and you got guys that are only under contract for one more year, or they're near the end of their walk year, you know, you move them. You move them to replenish. You don't go for a short term. Well, maybe the NL Central is really going to stink. So if we keep Helsley and Fetty, maybe we'll get in there. Maybe we'll win something. And hey, you know, once you get in, you never know what's going to happen. So still again, this stuck in this middle of the road. You're not good. You're not awful. You're trying to walk that thin line. You're trying to give the fans hope. But the thing that would really give them hope, the way Blues fans got hope, when they saw all these draft picks coming to St. Louis because Doug Armstrong had the intelligence to cash in, and he was opportunistic. And he collected all these draft picks. And all that did is not only – and the two offer sheet deals, that not only made the Blues better last season, and none of those draft picks were actually in play last season, but they were starting to move some younger players in the NHL. But it set up a nice future. And now they got off to a bad start because, as it turned out, Drew Bannister, nice guy, did a good job as an interim, but things just weren't clicking. So what did Mr. Armstrong do? You know, he made a tough call the way it was perceived. Well, that's unfair to Bannister. You know, you gave him a contract and he's only 22. No. Doug Armstrong's like, I did two videos on this. Some of you were for some reason skeptical of what I was saying, but I'm sorry. I was spot on. Jim Montgomery was the only coach he wanted. He wasn't available at the time he made you know, gave Bannister a 2-year contract because Bannister basically, as I referred to him, was a placeholder. Because my conspiracy theory, and I believe it more than ever, Montgomery wanted to get to St. Louis. He had a falling out with the people he worked for. Doug Armstrong desperately wanted Montgomery. So when Montgomery became available, Doug Armstrong went out and said, look, I know this is kind of rough on Banny. I got to do this for my team and my fans, our fans. I got to go get the best coach I can get, and that's Jim Montgomery. Jim Montgomery, by the way, who led Boston to a points percentage of 715 during his time there, which was easily number one in the league regular season. And Jim Montgomery, who I will update or remind you that in National Hockey League history, among coaches at 300 or more regular season games, Monty's got the fourth best winning percentage of all time. So what? He's available? And that's the guy you want all along, so you're going to be polite. Well, I can't. Oh, I can't do that to Bannon. No, he went out, got the best damn coach he could find, and put him in. Then look at how they've responded to him. 4-0-1. They're 4-0 on the road. You know, since he took over, Montgomery, they're not only 4-0-1, they have scored 67% of the goals, and they have actually done that at all strengths. 67% at 5-on-5, 67% of the goals at even, 67% all strengths. And, you know, you look at Doug Armstrong's leadership, even with the mistakes baked in, right, which we freely acknowledge. There have been quite a few. But since the start of the 2011-2012 season, which was really his first full season running the thing, where he was totally in charge, not part of a leadership group, you know, the last 14 seasons since 2011-2012, the Blues are number 4 in the NHL in wins. They're number 5 in points. They're number 11 in goals. They're number 6 in terms of preventing goals. They have the 6th best goal differential. In 10 of the last 13 seasons, they've been in the postseason. That doesn't include this one because we don't know yet, but they're on a track now. I think they got a really good chance to make the playoffs because they're increasing their pace, their points per game pace. Before the coaching change, they were on a pace for 80 points. Now it's like 86 points, but that's going to continue to grow. So in the last 13 seasons, been in the playoffs 10 times. They won a Stanley Cup. They went to 2 conference finals. And Doug Armstrong has always been opportunistic. He's not perfect. He's always been opportunistic, but he has a vision. And I'm going to be redundant. Yeah. He went out and got the best coach he could. And he even made a mistake with maybe you can argue a coach or two. You know, he fired Ken Hitchcock, and people say, well, I don't know, is Mike Yeo any better? That was questionable. But the Hitch always runs his course with players. He burns them out after a while. He's pretty demanding. But here's a guy where, you know, Doug Armstrong had the guts to bring in Ken Hitchcock and fired Davis Payne, who was the Drew Bannister of that time. He brought Hitchcock in. Then when Hitchcock ran out of gas, kind of burned the players out, he brought in Mike Yeo. Had made a real good move because he was grooming Craig Berube to be the next head coach. And so we all misread that at the time. That wasn't just an interim move. That was going to be his guy, and rightfully so. Now, we could debate whether it wasn't really fair to Berube to get fired, but Armstrong recognized, you know, our team's not built to play the kind of hockey we want. We need to have a team that's faster, just got more skill, not as rugged, not as physical. We're a slow team. We need to kind of change the way we play. And Doug Armstrong did look at that and say, well, we love Craig Berube and always will, but his style of hockey is different than the personnel we're starting to put together. Jim Montgomery's the ideal guy for this group, and he went out and got it. Now, some of you, I know you're already thinking, well, Bernie, you're the biggest Ollie Marmol fan in the world. No, I'm not. I just try to be fair. And with me, if I say he did a hell of a job running the bullpen, which he did, that's unacceptable to some of you because Oh, he's the worst manager in the history of any baseball anywhere in the world. So, you know, you hate him because of his association with the Mozeliak. I get it. All right. But as I've said, can the Cardinals do better? Yeah. Yeah, they can do better. So if they had an opportunity to bring, let me put it to you this way. Let's transpose the franchises. If Doug Armstrong had a chance to hire Terry Francona, he didn't like the way things were going, or he wanted to raise the standards. If Doug Armstrong had a chance to hire Terry Francona after last season, for example, I think Doug Armstrong would have done it, right? I think he would have done it. Cardinals, no, they obviously didn't want to do it. Cardinals, no, I don't know. We may keep these pitchers. We like our team. Doug Armstrong's like, Ryan O'Reilly, my gosh, you have our eternal gratitude. Tarasenko, thanks for all you've done. You scored some big goals in that 2019 run. Barbashev, you were part of that fourth line in 2019. We don't win the Stanley Cup without that fourth line. You know, and he didn't hesitate. He saw the future in mind, and not a distant future, a future that would actually arrive relatively soon. And he did what was best for the long-term interests of the club. It's just so obvious. So that's what I wanted to do, and I did go longer than I planned, but I got on a roll, and I'm having fun, and what the heck. Contrast the Blues approach to the Cardinals approach. And look at how already the Blues are now back to being a team on the rise. It didn't take long. It really didn't take long. They had one season where it was kind of like, eh, improved last year. And I think they're going to be even better this year now that they've got one of the best coaches around behind their bench. And those guys love them. They know them. They're inspired by him. The energy is really good. They're fun to watch. That's the other thing, the entertainment value. So anyway, just contrast the Blues and Doug Armstrong to the Cardinals under the current regime. It's kind of a wow thing, right? Listen, thank you for your patience. I was planning to go about 25 tops. I went 32. At least I'm counting. I'm cognizant of this. But anyway, thank you all for watching. Really, really appreciate the support. Have a wonderful weekend. And we'll be back Monday morning here on the Bernie Miklas Show. Thank you.